Donald Trump's $4.1 trillion budget for 2018 would boost military spending while cutting benefit programs from health care, including $600 billion in cuts to Medicaid over a decade, to a 30% reduction for the food stamp program SNAP. According to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, last year more than 44 million people received an average of $126 a month in SNAP benefits. This totaled about $66.6 billion. Most benefits were spent at superstores and supermarkets. Trump's proposal would shift some of the costs to states and increase work requirements, also limit some eligibility.
Donald Trump's budget is a travesty. It will make America hungrier, sicker, poorer.
Joel Berg is executive director of the New York City Coalition Against Hunger.
It would take hundreds of millions of dollars out of the grocery carts of hungry people in New York City alone. It is an absolute bait and switch on everything he campaigned on, and we hope that a bipartisan coalition in Congress rejects it before it even gets out of the gate.
Apologists today, Mulvaney and others, are saying that no, it's not really going to cut social benefits, it's not really going to hurt Medicaid, it's not really going to cut SNAP.
Yeah, there's a fancy word for when people try to explain that cuts aren't cuts. It's called a lie. There's no question this means real food coming out of the grocery carts of real families. This idea that they're just cutting the rate of increase is just a lie. Their proposal for SNAP cuts is $913 billion with a B. That's far more than even the horrible Ronald Reagan tried cutting when he tried making ketchup as a vegetable. So them walking back their own numbers is like an eighth grader who writes 1 + 1 = 3 in writing and then claims the next day he never did it, even though the teacher's providing him the paper.
Here in New York City, there's pushback and a cry to Mayor de Blasio for help. The New York City Council is requesting $22 million in emergency food aid for the city in the new budget, instead of the $11 billion the mayor has allocated.
In an almost unprecedented gesture, every single member of the New York City Council is standing with us today. From Fort Totten in Queens to Tottenville on Staten Island, everybody is with us. This is a top priority for the speaker.
Queens Council Member Barry Grudenchik.
We are here today to demand that Mayor de Blasio increase funding from the executive budget number of $11 million, which is a cut of $5 million for emergency food, to $22 million. And in light of the president's actions yesterday in eviscerating the SNAP program, this could not be more timely.
Traveling around New York City, one can find long lines of people outside food pantries and soup kitchens waiting for food to feed themselves, their families, food for children, for seniors, for the disabled, the homeless, food for low-wage workers. That's 14 million New York City residents per year who depend on food from food pantries and soup kitchens. And they rely on EPAP, the Emergency Food Assistance Program, to meet their needs. But when you enter food pantries around the city, often the shelves meant to be lined with food are sparse, even bare. Triada Sampas is with Food Bank of New York City.
There are almost 1,000 food pantries and soup kitchens across New York City, reaching about 1.4 million New Yorkers a year. When cupboards are bare, that is really the devastating moment for the folks who work on the front lines. The typical food pantry or soup kitchen in New York City operates on a budget of less than $25,000 a year. There are little leagues with bigger budgets. There are Girl Scout troops with bigger budgets. But this is the resource of last resort that New Yorkers rely on. And when there are empty cupboards, what ends up happening first? The first thing that a food pantry will do is they will start rationing. They'll start looking at how many people are on the line and how much food they have and start figuring out how can we divide this up so that even if people don't walk away with enough, no one walks away with nothing. We know that about half of food pantries and soup kitchens in New York City run out of food in a typical month. About a third end up having to turn people away because they've run out of food.
Sampas says the city's food bank relies on the emergency food program for food from the five food groups.
That program, EFAP, is a gold standard. It is a consistent year-round supply of food that meets high nutritional standards from all five food groups. So it is, in many ways, a source of food that food pantries and soup kitchens rely on and plan around, because we're interested in getting families whole meals. It's not enough to say, well, today we've got peanut butter, so we'll just give out peanut butter. We know people live on more than one type of food. When you think about how much things cost when you go shopping for groceries, the items that are most nutritious also are typically the most perishable and the most expensive. So protein products are in really high demand. Produce, especially fresh produce, in really high demand. For families that are operating on low incomes, the ability to buy food in, and especially if they are relying on SNAP, when benefits come in for the month, to buy fresh produce and risk things spoiling is really terrible. And the budget may not exist to go back and buy more.
Are you getting enough from the restaurants around New York City?
So the city's meal gap, the amount of food that's missing for families that are dealing with food insecurity, is at about 242 million. So there's 242 million missing meals in New York City. And the entire emergency food system still leaves a gap, all the 1,000 food pantries and soup kitchens, of about 100 million meals a year. So there's obviously more that's needed. We have tremendous partners in the retail industry, from grocery stores, supermarkets, green markets, restaurants, food manufacturers, distributors. The food industry is a really important partner, but the emergency food supply right now is not meeting the need.
New York City's food bank is looking for more support through advocacy.
We are very disturbed, as I think a lot of people are, by the news that came out of Washington yesterday and the threats that it poses to people's survival resources, and what that will mean to our network of frontline providers who are already struggling with a level of hunger in the city that they can barely keep up with. So you can advocate, you can volunteer, you can donate. We encourage New Yorkers to find their place in being a part of the solution.
For more, go to foodbanknyc.org. And you're listening to the news on listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio. This is WBAI in New York at 99.5 FM, streaming at WBAI.org. You may have heard about advertisers pulling out of the New York City Puerto Rican Day Parade. Coca-Cola, AT&T, and JetBlue have now pulled out. NYPD Police Commissioner won't march, and the New York Yankees said they wouldn't participate. Earlier, Goya Foods dropped out. The pretense is that it's because the parade is honoring Puerto Rican nationalist Oscar Lopez, released from prison after serving 35 years in prison before his sentence was commuted by President Barack Obama. The excuse that he was an FALN member, which claimed responsibility for bombings in the 70s and 80s, even though Oscar had nothing to do with those events, is a smokescreen, says New York City Council Speaker Melissa Mark Vivedito.
One thing that needs to be clear is that a lot of the campaign putting pressure on the sponsors to withdraw, et cetera, is being manipulated and organized and orchestrated from an ultra-right-wing element on the island. The statehood party is very much threatened by what this parade represents and what Oscar Lopez Rivera represents. And so at that, now they're engaging in trying to force companies to withdraw and making certain threats if they don't do so. So that's one element of it. Again, as I said, you know, the parade and the sponsors have the right to make the decisions that they make. Individuals who decide not to march can decide not to march. They can't base that decision, though, on lies or erroneous information or relitigating a case and making up facts that were never part of the original case. And so that's important to really determine. This parade is about celebrating the diversity of our culture, the contributions that we've made as Puerto Ricans. I support the board of directors in their decision, and people make their individual choices as to whether or not they want to participate.
Mark Vivedito says the campaign to free Oscar Lopez was 35 years in the making.
He was in jail almost 36 years, 12 years in solitary confinement. He received broad-based support, even coming from this council. International figures, Nobel laureates, Pope Francis, labor leaders, international and national support from very broad, diverse groups. So that demonstrates, right, what strength his campaign had, that it was a disproportionate sentence, that he was solely in jail because of his political beliefs, that he was not tied to any act of violence, that he has renounced violence, and to have received two presidential pardons. He did receive one from President Clinton, did not accept it because it was not offered to everyone. Okay, that's the sole reason he did not accept it. And then to have been offered a commutation not by President Obama. Obviously, I would think that a commutation is based on a thorough assessment of the case and whether or not this individual will reintegrate successfully into our society. There is a very strong case to be made. Those are the facts. Nothing else that can be said. People would be relitigating the case, and that is completely unfortunate. And that's what people are doing in basing their actions to not march, is based on lies.
And the New York City Council speaker says she saw a letter circulated on the island by a large business owner threatening not to renew contracts with corporations that continue to sponsor the New York City Parade. A New York City Parade being undermined by the right-wing statehood party in Puerto Rico, occurring on the same day as a referendum on the island on the political status of Puerto Rico. And for WBAI listeners, here are the speaker's comments in Spanish.
Vamos a estar claros de ciertas cosas. Esta campaña de tratar de desprestigiar el desfile está siendo orquestado por un grupo de ultraderechistas estadistas en Puerto Rico. Esto todo está siendo orquestado por un grupo de la isla. Esto no es algo que surge de aquí, de Nueva York, o de ningún otro otra ciudad que ha participado en este desfile. Así que eso es importante que se reconozca. Y los patrocinadores tienen el derecho, ¿no?, de tomar su decisión. Yo apoyo la decisión de la Junta Directiva del desfile puertorriqueño de hacer lo que están haciendo, de darle reconocimiento a aquellos que ellos han decidido le quieren dar reconocimiento, y el desfile sigue. Aunque los patrocinadores posiblemente no tengan una carroza, todavía están contribuyendo a las becas, por ejemplo, pero esto es un desfile del pueblo, y el pueblo va a seguir marchando, y el desfile sigue hacia adelante, y la gente que se quiera unir, que se una, que sea el pueblo que dicte lo que decide, o sea, lo que vaya a decidir hacer, eso tienen el derecho de hacer, pero no estoy de acuerdo en las decisiones, ¿por qué lo están haciendo? Porque está basado en información incorrecta.
New York City Council Speaker Melissa Mark Vivedito.
We're the Rude Mechanical Orchestra, and when we're in New York, we listen to WBAI, Pacifica Radio, 99.5 FM.
The Rude Mechanical Orchestra stood outside the gates of City Hall along with members of SEIU with a victory. Today, the New York City Council passed a Fair Work Week legislation package. It helps fast food and retail workers in New York City win advance notice, stable schedules, and a pathway to full-time hours.
Oh, what a great day this is.
Brooklyn Councilmember Brad Lander.
As a result of the organizing that fast food workers have done, we're going to make it possible for people to have stable lives. There's no way, if you don't know your schedule in advance, that you could possibly have a stable life, that you can organize your childcare, your school. And if you want to have a full-time job, but you're stuck in a part-time one, you're just spinning your wheels. And the bills we're doing today, I mean, fast food workers get 2 weeks advance notice of their schedule. They can't be required to do these clopenings. And if they want a full-time job, they'll be able to get it, because before an employer brings on a new worker, they have to offer those hours to the existing workers. And so over time, you can get enough hours to put a full-time job and a stable life together.
That would mean a lot.
Chantel Walker from Brooklyn works at Papa John. She's one of many workers who will benefit from the legislation.
You know, right now we're dealing with a lot of not even fair scheduling, you know, for me, for my coworkers. And we want justice, and we want a nonprofit organization for us, by us. And we want fair scheduling, and we want to have a better life. In the past, I had previous scheduling issues, and I think it would be a great thing not just for me, but for coworkers as a whole. I think if we start here in the city, we can incorporate that in the industry as a whole. I think it needs to change, and a lot of things in the industry needs to change, and it's I feel like it's up to us, the workers, to try to make things change in this country.
Everywhere we go, people want to know. We are fast food workers. Fast food workers. Fighting for justice.
Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.